Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. It's available now at bookbaby.com and also at amazon.com. Mark Urselli is a six-time Grammy Award nominated, three-time Grammy Award winning engineer, producer, mixer, sound designer, and front of house engineer. Mark Urselli works with artists from around the world. He has worked with U2, Foo Fighters, Nick Cave, Lou Reed, Sting, Keith Richards, Kesha, Jeff Beck, Les Paul, Buddy Guy, Luther Vandross, and many, many other legendary artists performing rock, pop, metal, jazz, experimental, avant-garde, new music, urban, and electronica, and classical music. Mark also composes music for film and television, creates sound design for commercials, and mixes audio for film and television. He also recorded and mixed more than a half a dozen movie soundtracks. Mark was born in Switzerland and raised in Italy. His musical education began at age 12. At 17, he opened his first commercial recording facility in Italy. Man, that's amazing. Mark later moved to New York City, where he currently resides and works as chief house engineer for the historic and legendary recording studio East Side Sound. Mark is a renowned in-demand freelance producer and engineer. He records and mixes in the highest caliber studios worldwide, including Village Recorders, Capitol Sound, East West in L.A., Sunset Sound in L.A., Sears Sound in New York, Flux in New York, Grouse Lodge in Dublin, and many others. Mark Urselli is also an entrepreneur, and when he's not in the studio, his interests include traveling, kite surfing, guitars, art, web design, and writing. Please welcome three-time Grammy Award-winning engineer, producer, mixer, sound designer, and front-of-house engineer, Mark Urselli, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Man, that's a hell of a resume.
Thank you. Sounds so much better when you read it.
Yeah, sometimes I got to put this in perspective for all these artists, you know, because they forget what they've done. So I kind of condense it and let you know what's happening.
Good to be reminded.
Yeah, you need to be reminded. Exactly. Well, you're an amazing engineer, producer. Well, that's pretty cool that you were born in Switzerland and then moved to Italy. That's kind of mixture, isn't it?
Yeah, my mom is Swiss and my dad is Italian, and they basically raised us in Switzerland, and then my dad wanted to move back, so family did, and that's where I grew up.
You know, it's funny, I just found out, I did one of those DNA testings, and yeah. I found out I was 49% Italian.
Oh, okay, cool. I did one of those too, and I found that I was 16% British.
Really?
No idea how that came about, but since I now have an apartment in London as well, I guess I feel more at home even.
Yeah, exactly. I think those tests are pretty cool. I just hope they're, you know, accurate.
Well, I'm sure they are. You know, you can't possibly know what was going on 100 years before, so that's a good way to find find out.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool to find out, though, if you can trace it back that far, you know, find out if you have any gladiators or anything in your family, you know. That'd be kind of...
Right, right.
Yeah. I want to first talk about, this is exciting, an exciting project. It's called Angel Headed Hipster. It's the songs of Mark Bolan and, of course, T-Rex. The album is great. You know, it's really, to me, it sounds almost like a rock opera, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Rock opera slash concept album. I could see this performing on, like, Broadway, you know? It's, I guess if T-Rex was more popular, you know, it probably could have been on Broadway. Talk about this album.
Yeah, it's a fantastic album. It came out August 29th as a limited edition double vinyl white album, white vinyl. And then on September 4th, in the other formats, meaning digital CDs and the regular black double album. It's a double CD. It's got 26 tracks. It features tons of renowned artists like Kesha, Nick Cave, Joan Jett, Borns, Lucinda Williams, Beth Orton, U2 in duet with Elton John, which has never happened before, Emily Haynes of Metric, Father John Misty, Perry Farrell, Gavin Friday, Mark Allman, Todd Rundgren, both Sean and Julian Lennon, David Johansen, the singer of the New York Dolls. There's just an incredible amount of talent on this record that was selected by Hal Wilner, who's the producer of this record, who sadly died of COVID a day after his 64th birthday in April. But he considered this his white album, and I must agree with that. I think it's some of his and my best work.
Yeah, it's amazing. How did they select the artist to play on this album? Because it's, you know, it's a very eclectic mix of music artists. It really is.
Yeah. Well, eclectic is really the way I would describe both Hal and my career. If you look at Hal's discography and you've seen my biography, it's very eclectic.
Yep.
Both Hal and I have been, you know, involved in jazz and rock and many different other genres. And Hal has had an incredible life made of great encounters. He was able to build long-lasting friendships and relationships with a lot of these artists. Nick Cave is one of his really close friends and was the first artist we recorded for this album. And that kind of set the tone. It took 3 years to make this album, so it wasn't easy, but it was an amazing journey.
Now, how did you decide which artists were going to sing which track? Because that's got to be very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, it was Hal's decision.
He was very
good at basically matching. He's kind of like a movie director in the sense that he finds the right actor for the right part. That was one of his skills. And in some cases, the artists have expressed a specific desire.
Right.
Or wish for a song, like U2, Bono sent Hal a video of himself in a plane singing Bang a Gong, and that was Bono's way of telling Hal that he wanted to do that song.
Yeah, I see Bang a Gong is on there twice. David Johansen also did it.
Exactly, that's a perfect example of where Hal thought David Johansen would do a good job with Bang a Gong, which he did.
He did
it in a jazz swing kind of version.
Right.
And then after the fact, Bono decided he wanted to do that song, and so that was an example of where it was the artist's choice that landed us with two versions of the same song.
Yeah, there are some artists, you know, you don't really hear out there too much, you know, that aren't, you know, it kind of in the mind's eye, you know, like Father John Misty. You know, guys like that, Perry Farrell, you know, these guys aren't, you know, not in my mind anyway, but, and then of course, Nina, or is it Nana,
who,
Luft Balloons, you know, but you haven't, you know, in America, we haven't heard from her for such a long time. It's really cool to hear these artists on this album.
Yeah. I mean, Father John Misty has a pretty large following to this day. He's relatively young artist. Perry Farrell was the singer of Porno for Pirates and Jane's Addiction, so he's been around forever. Nana's been around forever.
Right.
But there are artists like, for example, Elysian Fields, who are a New York band that is amazing, that's maybe lesser known when next to these other artists. But that's exactly what Hal liked to do. Mm-hmm. He liked to give younger artists a chance and make sure that they can shine next to bigger artists.
Right.
And that's also a way in which Hal has often given people a chance and even in some ways been very important to their careers. Think about Jeff Buckley, who was basically discovered by Hal Wilner.
Mm-hmm.
Or also, a lot of other artists will give Hal Wilner credit for where they are in their career.
You know, Elysian Fields is such a great band. I love them. I just put in a request to interview the, I forgot her name, but, you know, the main...
Which band are you talking about?
Elysian Fields.
Elysian Fields, yes.
They are incredible. They are really a good band. That's kind of my, you know, I like those kind of mystical type bands that are out there. You know, I'm a big fan of progressive rock and all that. So, yeah, they're a great band.
Yes, very much so.
Some of my favorite songs, you know, I love Joan Jett. And, of course, she did a great job with Jeepster. She did a wonderful job with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you got some, you know, like you said, YouTube with Elton John. That's unusual.
Yes, that came about. Actually, it was YouTube themselves who suggested Elton as somebody they would like to work with because they had never worked with him before. And Elton actually knew Mark Bolan in person. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that on this record, he was probably the only one who knew Mark Bolan in person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure that that's accurate, but I'm pretty sure it is. So when U2 said we'd like to do something with Elton, we were, of course, like, you know, absolutely, that's great. And we flew to France and recorded Elton John play piano. It was supposed to be just that, him playing piano, but then he suggested himself or offered to do some singing, and so we ended up with a great duet.
Another great song, Maria McKee was...
Yes.
Yeah, she was
that
born...
That was one of the first sessions that we did in the studio.
Uh-huh.
I believe the same day we recorded Nick Cave, so it was the very first session 4 years ago. She was very gracious. She came to the studio. She lives in Los Angeles, where we recorded Nick Cave and her. And Gavin Friday, who's in Dublin, did a duet with her.
And, you know, Sean Lennon did a very good job with Mambo Sun.
Yeah,
I was surprised. He did a really nice job with that.
Yeah, Sean was great.
Uh-huh.
He's known the house for a long time. Sean's partner, Charlotte Kemp-Mole, is
right.
Also on the track.
Right.
That track we recorded at my studio in New York, East Side Sound, where I do most of my sessions and where I mix this entire record.
So how did you record all these artists? I mean, you had to do a lot of traveling and nobody came together or they didn't send in, you know, tapes or MP3s or anything like that. How did that happen? You had to chase these guys all over the world?
Yes, we did. We did. In fact, if you looked at the liner notes,
right.
Hal gave me a beautiful thank you in the liner notes saying that I made the album sound great, but he also said thank you to Mark yourself for schlepping all over the world. That's what we did. We schlepped all over the world. Most of the sessions were done in Los Angeles at Digital Village Recorders and in New York at Sears Sound.
Right.
But some sessions, like the U2 one, was recorded in New Orleans, and then we flew to France to record Elton John.
Oh my gosh.
So there's definitely been sessions done all over the world, and almost nothing was done without us being all together in the studio.
Yeah.
I think Nana was maybe the only one who sent her track in, because Hal likes to work with people being in the same room with the musicians. And so all of these are real sessions done the old school way,
mm-hmm.
where all the musicians are in the same room. A great example of that is Cosmic Dancer, Nick Cave's song.
Right.
If you look on YouTube, there's a video of that, and you can see that every single person is in the same room playing together with Nick singing and playing the piano, and it's mm-hmm. all happening at the same time.
Yeah. It's amazing the work you guys did on this project. Now, would you say this was a tough engineering job for you?
definitely had a lot of challenges because there was so much variety in the sounds, and so it was my job to give the record sort of a cohesive sound. And of course, multiple studios, multiple artists, multiple bands, multiple instruments. That was the toughest part for me to work on something that then would sound like one record. But also organization was key because you have to keep track of all these sessions. Everything needs to be labeled. There's multiple versions of every song. You have to stay on top of your game and know exactly what you're doing.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah, 3 years, of your life working on this thing. It's like, you know, it's like being an author, you know, and just writing a book.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like we worked, 3 years just on this. We were both doing other things in the meantime.
Right.
I travel a lot and I run, a recording studio in New York called East Side Sound, which is one of the longest running studios in New York since 1972. So I kept doing sessions with other artists. But every time Hal and I got together for this record, we would work for a couple of days on something, and it just took time to wrangle all this talent and organize the sessions.
Well, you did a wonderful job. The sound quality is great. It's a fantastic album. I'll give it 5 stars.
Thank you very much, Ray. I'm very proud of this record, and I'm emotional too because of Hal's last record.
Yeah.
It was some of our best work.
I can see why Hal called it the White Album. You know, it makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I had a lot of the guys that were in that original recording of Bang a Gong on the show. I just had Rick Wakeman on last week. Ian McDonald's been on the show. Mark Volman and Howard Kalin, you know, from the Turtles, they were on that original recording. They've been on the show. It's pretty cool. I, you know, got a little bit of association, I guess, with Mark Bolan.
That's very cool. I didn't know that Rick Wakeman was on that session.
Yeah, he was a keyboard player. Yeah, he's done a lot that a lot of people don't know about, including working with Bowie. You know, he was on Space Oddity, the original recording of Space Oddity.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's so funny. You know, he's had another side to him a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah. He was one of the first keyboard players that I listened to. I found an old 7-inch record of his in my parents' record collection. So it was really one of the... I'm a keyboard player myself.
Right.
It was one of the first keyboard players I was exposed to.
Yeah, he's amazing. He really is. Another album that you worked on that I've had on the show, Nona Hendrix, and I've also had Gary Lucas on the show, The World of Captain Beefheart. I promoted that album, and you worked on that album with them as well, right?
Yes, correct. I recorded the album at East Side Sound, the studio I just mentioned, and I mixed the record there. Jesse Krakow, the bass player, was co-producing it with Gary Lucas, and I've worked with Gary for a long time. I've known it for a long time, so it was nice to get together again.
Yeah, also an excellent album. I really enjoyed that. Nona's cool. I really like her.
She's great. Amazing.
Yeah, of course, you know, for our listening audience, she's, you know, widely well known as being in LaBelle, you know, with Patti LaBelle. And she always wore the space outfit, which she still has in her closet.
And she's also Jimi Hendrix's cousin.
That's right. You're right. Second cousin or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you some producer, engineer-type questions. How did you learn how to, you know, your techniques and everything? How did you learn how to do what you're doing? I talked to Todd Rundgren about that. He said he just got on the board and started learning, you know. He was kind of self-taught. How about you?
Yeah, I'm also self-taught.
Really?
Self-taught. I started in Italy, like you read in my biography, when I was 17. I was I was already producing bands, and so I decided to open a recording studio in my parents' basement. I had a friend who had a larger recording studio, and I bought his console that he was selling, and that's how it started. I built it out. I did all the double walls and the floated floors and drop ceilings. And I started recording punk hardcore. bands, and I basically got better at while doing it. I did an internship at my friend's studio in Italy that sold me the console, and after about 3 years, I felt like I was trapped in Italy and needed to get outside of my comfort zone so I could get better at what I do. And so I decided to take an internship in New York at Eastside Sound, where I cleaned, made coffee, cleaned the toilet, was a runner, worked for absolutely no money for 2 years. But those were my formative years. I watched great artists come through the studio. Then I got my first break one day when the owner couldn't make a session. Luther Vandross was coming in that day.
Yep.
And so I stepped up to the plate, and that's when I started working as a assistant and then an engineer. And today I'm the chief engineer and manager of Eastside Sound.
That's a great story. It really is. And that's the way it works. You know, you gotta work for nothing for a while, and you know, it's you know, learning is the key. Exactly. Who are some of the producers and engineers that you admire? What are the guys that you look up to, I guess?
Oh, there's a lot. There's so many. Amongst the producers, Rick Rubin is one of the ones I look up to because of how versatile he is,
right,
on how many genres he works in or on. Hal, of course, was a great mentor of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst the engineers, there's people like Glenn Jones, Jeff Emmerich. There's a lot of great engineers, mostly from the past, but also in present times. There's great Al Schmidt in present times. He's a fantastic engineer. So many.
Yeah, it's amazing that the the producer, the engineer, is so important to a recording. You know, if it wasn't for them, you know, it just wouldn't sound right.
Absolutely. Well, very few people realize that unless they're musicians and they know how it works. But yes, if you don't record something properly, it's never going to sound properly, and that's important for posterity.
Yep. The only problem I have with some of the recordings today, I guess mainly pop, it's kind of overproduced, you know, and I missed the day. I was a DJ back in the late 70s. I did Top 40 radio, and I love the way the 60s recordings sounded back then. It was very simple. You know, they didn't have all the bells and whistles they did today, but it was clear, you know, that you had that echoing sound effect, you know, the reverb or whatever in the background. I the old Beatle records and Rolling Stones and all that. I just love the way it sounded back in the day. They can't reproduce that today, you know?
Yeah. Well, what changed is the rooms. The rooms have gotten smaller.
Right.
And so you're missing that echo of that sound of the room that you're probably referring to.
Right.
And also the major difference between then and now. Limitations, and the lack of limitations in a technical world has sadly given artists carte blanche to keep going, and that's how you get into the overproduced thing that you're talking about.
Right.
Back in the Beatles day, when there were four tracks or eight tracks, mm-hmm. you had to get creative and you had to make every track count. Today, with unlimited track counts, people easily get into this frame of mind where they just keep adding and lose the essence of the song.
Exactly right. And, you know, some of the greatest recordings of all time were, you know, not that complicated. They kind of jerry-rigged the recording studio. I'm thinking about, like, you know, Alan Parsons and the Dark Side of the Moon album, some of the things they did on that album.
Oh, that's an incredible album.
Yeah.
First EP I ever bought, I believe, or second.
Yeah. And, you know, it's still so popular today after all these years. What makes a good producer?
There's a lot of ways I could answer that, but I think the most important part of a producer is to be able to embody the vision of the artist and not get in the way of what the artist wants to do.
Right.
A good producer is not going to tie the artist's hands behind their backs. It's going to let the artist express themselves, but it's going to make sure that everything comes out great and is going to be able to oversee the whole thing. I like producers job and are able to pull from a pool of people and get people together to create magic.
Have you ever had to discipline a band, you know, that was just kind of like, I don't know, a little out of control and they wanted everything their way and you knew it wasn't going to work?
Well, it does happen, especially with the younger, less experienced band.
Right.
I still, to this day, work with a lot of young independent artists. And it happens that lack of experience, I wouldn't say discipline, it's not like I'm a school teacher, but sometimes they just need a little bit of help or nudging in the right direction so that you can help them get to where they want to get.
Right, right. So, you always hear the stories, I don't know if it's real or not, you know, the, you know, fighting in the studio, you know, but, you know, I'm talking about, you know, the young guys as well.
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't had any fighting in the studio, luckily.
Yeah, that'd be difficult to work with. Your recording studio, now, can anybody sign up with you and, you know, you do the work for them, or how's that work?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Eastside Sound is a commercial recording facility, so anyone who wants to record there can. It's a great room with a digitally controlled analog console, fully analog. We have a beautiful piano, drum sets, amps, and most importantly, we have a live room with 6 ISO booths, so we can record up to 7 musicians completely isolated with line of sight.
Okay.
And these ISO booths in these times of COVID have also been extremely helpful because people are able to do sessions at our studio while staying socially distant, physically separate from each other in separate rooms.
Oh, great.
They don't have to wear a mask because they're literally in a separate room separated by glass. But they can see each other and work together. So it's been a great asset.
Wow, that's very
and
important.
I myself am a freelance engineer / producer, so although Eastside Sound is my favorite place to work at, I am not directly tied to it. I can work anywhere, and people can just get in touch with me via my website, and if they want to work with me, I can go to them, or we can work long distance, or they can come to me. You know, we find ways around geographical limitations.
Run down a quick checklist or scenario. If somebody comes in, say it's a band, and they want to sign up with you. What are the steps after they sign up with you?
By signing up, you mean working with me?
Yes.
It depends on what they want to do. A lot of the work that I do these days is done remotely, especially now during COVID.
Uh-huh.
So I've been mixing a lot of records for people, and all they have to do is really get in touch with me via the website, www.markyourcelli.com, where there's a contact form and they can get in touch with me and tell me what they want me to mix, and then they send me the files and I mix it for them and I send it back to them, and they're able to send revision requests so they can say, turn this down here, turn this up here, change this, change that, and I'll make a new revision. And, that's something that's been going on for years now. The industry's been going into this direction of working remotely for a while before COVID. But of course, if somebody wants to work with me directly, be with me in the same room, then we can decide whether they want to fly to New York or to London, because I also record in London, or whether I can fly to them and we find a studio where they live that works for what we want to do and we work together.
Huh, that's amazing. That's pretty cool. Now, do they send you like an MP3, an MP4? How do they send you their music?
Well, they can send me an MP3 of a demo for me to hear what they're working on. But if it comes down to me working with them as a mixing engineer, then they would send me the tracks, the separate tracks or stems of their recording session or a Pro Tools session, Logic files, whatever format they're working in. On the other hand, if they want to hire me as a producer, then obviously we would get together before the recording is done so that we can work together to get the best recording.
So what's the first thing you listen for when listening to a new recording?
It depends on whether if I'm supposed to judge the recording or if I'm supposed to just judge the performance.
Right.
Usually I try to take, you know, to listen to it with an open mind and not, especially if I'm going to mix it, I don't care how well it's been recorded. Then I focus, well, I shouldn't say I don't care how well it's recorded. I care how well it's being recorded. I don't care how well the rough mix sounds, because it's a rough mix. I'm going to mix it and make it sound better, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But I do care about the performance, so I listen to how the band is playing, how the singer is singing, how they're grooving to each other. All of those are important elements that are going to make it easier for me, if I have a really great sounding band, to get a great sounding mix.
Can you tell if something's going to be like a hit? I mean, it's hard to say like a hit today as opposed to the 60s and 70s, but can you tell if something, you know, really has what it takes? And if it does, do you get excited about it and want to get more involved in the project?
I get excited about good music, whether right. it's going to be a hit or not. And in today's world, it's impossible to say whether something is going to be a hit.
Right.
Because of many reasons. Sadly, in today's world, it's not talent and quality that are the defining factor of whether something is going to be a hit. Other factors are important. Today, you know, it depends how many followers you have on Instagram, how many listeners you have on Spotify. It's all about metrics and numbers,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about having a good publicist and a good marketing plan.
Yeah.
So those are all important factors in deciding whether it's going to be a hit. And besides, you know, unless you're working with people like Beyonce or people like that, there aren't really hits anymore. There's just people making music, and the ones that are good are able to make a living out of it.
Yeah, it's really different today, isn't it?
Very different.
Yep. You've worked with one artist, I think, for every album. John Zorn, over 60 albums you recorded with him?
I've done over 110 records with John.
Wow. Now, John's a jazz artist, correct?
He's not just a jazz artist. He's done a lot of jazz records.
Right.
He's also done metal records.
Really?
He's done classical music records. He's done klezmer records, noise records. He's super eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
Great inspiration to me for both his, how eclectic he is, but also his work ethic is just uncompromising. He's an incredible artist, a powerhouse of creativity. He never stops composing. That's how we made over 110 records together. And that's just in the 12, 13, 14 years that I've worked with him. Before me, he's 67, I believe, now. So before me, he's worked with many other engineers, and he's made probably another 200 or 300 records.
Jeez,
in his career.
That's crazy. He's still a young guy, too. You know?
Yeah, he's only 67.
Yeah.
He's still got a lot to say and do and write, and I'm sure he's going to continue for a long time.
This was a quote from Downbeat magazine. They said that he was one of our most important composers. So, yeah. That's,
absolutely. I would agree with that. I think he's going to be in the future, in, you know, 50 years from now, he's going to be looked at the way we look at Beethoven today. He's definitely one of the most influential contemporary composers.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to more John Zorn, for sure. Maybe we can get him on the show. Yeah. And also in 2005, you recorded and mixed the Les Paul 90th birthday tribute album, Les Paul and Friends, right?
That's correct. That record won 2 Grammy
That's
Awards
right.
for Best Instrumental Rock and Best Instrumental Pop Performance.
Uh-huh.
It was a record that was tracked in part at Capitol Studios in L.A. and in part at Eastside Sound in New York. I did all the sessions at Eastside Sound, and I mixed the entire record at Eastside Sound. And it was, like you said, to celebrate Les Paul's 90th birthday. Now, for the list, I'm sure all your listeners know who Les Paul is.
Oh, yeah.
But for those who might not, he was not only the inventor of the solid body electric guitar, but also the inventor of the multi-track recording, which is what gave us all a job eventually. The inventor of things like flanger and echo and things like that. He was an incredible sweet, mm-hmm. great musician, and because of the legacy that he had, that he's left, everyone came out of the woodwork and wanted to pay tribute to him. So on that record, we have Keith Richards, Buddy Guy, Sting, Joss Stone, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Sam Cooke, Richie Sambora, so many amazing artists
yeah.
coming together to play duets with Les Paul, and it was fantastic to work on that record.
Yeah, I'm going to promote that album also, besides the Mark Bolan album, because that's a very important album for everyone needs that in their collection, for sure.
Please, yeah. Yes, I think I'm very proud of that record.
Yeah.
I think it sounds great, and it's got fantastic performances.
Yeah, and congratulations on 2 Grammys for that. That was at the 48th Annual Grammy Awards.
Thank you very much, Ray.
That's incredible. You also work with TV and film soundtracks and mix several movie soundtracks. What are some of the works you've done in that area?
For movie soundtracks, I worked mostly with Zorn.
Uh-huh.
There was a period of time where he was getting a lot of work as a composer for film. He hasn't done that so much lately, but in those years, he was writing for movies, and then he would hire me to basically record the score and mix it for him and for the movie directors. And then there were some other movies also that I worked on. It's definitely not the biggest part of what I do in a year, but it's nice to work on that stuff. I enjoy it very much.
You know, I talk to a lot of music artists who, you know, they have hit records, but now they're working in the advertising field because they make a lot of money doing songs for commercials and things like that. I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's where the money's at these days.
Yeah. That and video games. Music and video games. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done video games, you know, mixing music for video games?
No, I've yet to do a video game. I haven't been asked. I would love to do it because I think you should do everything once in
sure.
life, and I'm always open to try new things, and I'm sure I can do a good job. I just haven't been asked to do a video game yet.
Right. I'm sure that will come soon.
Hope so.
What was it like working with Lou Reed? Lou Reed was an interesting character, huh? Especially during interviews.
Yes. Have you ever tried interviewing him?
No, I have not. I was supposed to, but then he passed away, so
yeah,
didn't work.
He was not very kind to interviewers, but he was always very kind to me.
Right.
I've worked with him for 7 years. We've become friends in those 7 years, and I love the guy. He was a massive influence on me. He was, you know, he was a rock icon, but he was also somebody who was genuinely into music, genuinely into guitars and pedals. He was just an exquisite person to be around as long as you are on his good side.
Right. another guy I thought did a very, very good job on his solo stuff. I think he should have probably done more. I really liked his first solo album a lot, was Joe Perry. I think, didn't you work with Joe?
I did work with Joe, but I only worked with Joe on that Les Paul and Friends record
okay.
that we talked about prior.
Right.
On the last song, closing the album with Mick Hucknall on vocals. It's a beautiful track. I think you should play that for your listeners at some point because it's really a gorgeous tune.
Yeah, he's very talented. You know, I wanted to see him do more without Aerosmith because, you know, it's he can do so much on his own.
I haven't heard his solo stuff,
right.
but I've always been a big fan of Aerosmith. Would love to work with them someday. They're a fantastic rock band, in my opinion. And so I'm sure you're right. I mean, if he's like that with Aerosmith, you know, another guy like that was on that Les Paul record is Richie Sambora.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody that I've never worked with John Bon Jovi, but Richie Sambora is a fantastic guitar player and singer, which you don't know if you're a John Bon Jovi fan. You don't really hear Richie Sambora sing much, but he's
right.
got an incredible vocal range and style and just tone. And he sang a Paul McCartney tune on the Les Paul and Friends record. really cool tune. So, yeah, it's also a track to check out.
Here's a question, Mark, that I ask everybody. I get some really interesting answers about this question. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to work with or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Ooh, there's so many in the past that have gone mm-hmm. before I was able to work with them. Jimi Hendrix is one.
Yep.
A huge Hendrix fan. From the people alive today, I would love to work with Nine Inch Nails and haven't had a chance yet. I hope that day will come. But there's so many. Led Zeppelin, everything from that 70s rock era is stuff that I grew up on and would love to work on.
You know, Switzerland, there's a lot of legendary artists living in Switzerland. I keep in contact with Billy Cobham. He's got a place there. Petula Clark has a place there. A lot of people live in Switzerland. It sounds like a great place. When's the last time you've been there?
I only lived there until I was 8, but
really?
I do go back every year to visit friends and family.
Right.
Mostly family. My mom's side is all there.
Uh-huh.
And I go skiing there in the winter. And Switzerland is a gorgeous place.
Oh, yeah.
And it's definitely also my brother and sister live in Switzerland. So I go visit my nieces and nephews. It's a gorgeous place to live. It's very comfortable to live there. I think Tina Turner lives there.
Mm-hmm.
There was somebody that lived near my house at some point. I forget, but it's a great place to be. It's an expensive place.
Yeah,
and so
I can imagine.
That's why only the famous artists end up living there, because it's not really the kind of place where you can move to and just live comfortably unless you have those kind of savings in the bank.
Yeah, Switzerland's one of those places you never hear anything really, negative about. You know, only good things.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit square.
Yeah.
It's a little bit closed-minded. Maybe it's because it's a landlocked place.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
So it definitely has some bad sides, but it's mostly a beautiful place. And really, from a nature standpoint, it's unbeatable. It's postcard everywhere you look.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, you got some interesting hobbies. Let's talk about some of your hobbies.
Sure. Well, I'm a kite surfer.
Wow.
obvious. I like kite surfing. I usually go down to North Carolina to do it, to the Outer Banks, or I fly to the Caribbean.
Uh-huh.
I do it in Italy, sometimes in Florida, where you're at.
Right. Now, explain how you kite surf. Is that over water?
Yes, you kite surf. Basically, you're on something that looks like a surfboard,
okay.
But you got straps on it so you can slide your feet in it. And then you have a kite that's about between 8 and 15 square meters, so it's very large. It's the size of a car, basically.
Okay.
But powered by wind, and you have four lines between you and the kite. You're attached to the kite with a harness around your waist, and then you move the bar, the control bar, up and down in specific fashion so you can control the movement of the kite in the air and propel yourselves forward or upward. You can do very high jumps, kite surfing. It's a beautiful sport. You're one and only around, you're alone in nature, and it's all you hear is the sound of the wind and the waves, and it's a very spiritual experience in a way, but also a great way to stay in shape if you do it often enough.
How high can you get?
Oh, you can get very high.
Really?
You can get 30, 50 feet up in the air if you want to.
Hmm. You ever look down and see sharks?
I have not seen a shark yet, but I've seen water snakes. I've seen stingrays,
right.
Things like that.
Wow. Sounds pretty interesting. Yeah.
I've seen turtles. That's always beautiful to jump and see a turtle below you.
Yeah, I'd get a little nervous if I saw a couple of sharks below me.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't seen sharks. I have seen dolphins, and right. That's a beautiful experience. You know, there's that first moment where you see the dolphin fin, and you get scared because you think it could be a shark, but
right.
Then you see the motion and you realize it's a dolphin, and you calm down.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite sports to do. I also snowboard in the winter, but I would say my biggest hobby is traveling. I love experiencing new cultures, new foods, new people. I love going around the world to places that are remote and finding out the music of those places.
Sure.
So I've been all over the world. Still haven't been to the continent of Africa and Antarctica, but I've been to all the other continents everywhere, left, right, up and down.
Have you been to Dubai?
I haven't been to Dubai,
yeah.
No.
That's another expensive place.
Sure. I'm sure someday I'll get there because Dubai in recent years has had quite a resurgence or surge of amount of concerts.
Right.
And like you said, there's a lot of money there, so people are booking American artists more there. So I'm sure I'll end up there since I also do live sound for artists and I do musical tours and things like that.
Yeah, I haven't been yet, but I would love to go. My family's background, I grew up with a very eclectic music in my family. My dad's family is from Syria, but we found out that they were in Italy first before they went to Syria. That's how I found out about me being 49% Italian. And I grew up listening to Syrian music. Umm Kasum, you know, she was an Egyptian, very famous Egyptian singer. He was always playing that. My mom's Cuban, was Cuban, and, Celia Cruz in the house all the time. Then me playing Led Zeppelin in my room. You know?
Beautiful.
So,
that's the music. It's a universal language that you and I call, and it goes beyond any political or geographical border.
Exactly. Exactly. If we can make peace in this world, it's going to be through music. That's what I believe.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thought, and you find me in total agreement.
Yep. Mark, anything else you want to promote or chat about?
Well, if you're putting it that way, I will take the opportunity to talk about a record that I'm producing, which is coming out next year.
Okay.
Called Step and Doom, and it's a project I've been working on for years that unites doom metal guitar players from the Western Hemisphere with throat singers from the Eastern Hemisphere.
Wow.
For those listeners who don't know what throat singing is, it's a very ancient technique that some people in places like Mongolia, Tuva, Siberia do with their throat so they can create multiple sounds at the same time and overtones, very guttural. And I always thought that would complement very well with slow doom metal. And
right.
So I contacted all these great doom metal guitar players like Steve Until from Neurosis or Matt Pike from Sleep and High on Fire. I've got some great collaborations on this record. It's very eclectic. It's going to appeal to both fans of world music as well as of metal, especially doom metal. And I've been producing this record for several years now because it's been so hard to get in touch with all these singers in places that have very little internet. Some of these singers live in, like the Tuvans are nomadic people that live in huts and move during certain seasons. So it hasn't been easy, but it's coming along great. It's almost finished. It will be out next year. Along with also the second volume of the, I released a record 2 years ago with Jim Jarmusch, the director,
right.
And Lee Ronaldo of Sonic Youth, and Balázs Panni, who's a Hungarian drummer. We did a quartet record together of ambient jazz. The first album came out 2 years ago on Trost Records, which is a Austrian label, and the second volume of that will also come out sometime next year, most likely.
I love ambient music, and ambient jazz just sounds wonderful.
You're gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. What's a good example of that the music, the throat technique thing that you were just talking about? If I want to see an example of that on YouTube, what's a group or a band that would be doing that?
The band, what, there's, I'll give you two names.
Okay.
The one band is called Hun or Two, and it's spelled H-U-U-N-H-U-U-R-T-U.
Okay.
So three different words. And they are sort of, they're considered the masters of the genre. They're some of the best singers in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have participated in this record. I'm very proud to have them. And the other great artist I would urge you to check out is Yatka, which is spelled Y-A-T, and then the other word is K-H-A. And he is a solo singer that has made records where he puts together rock and sings it with throat singing style. So he's even done covers of, I think, AC/DC and Queen, really? Done with the throat singing style, which are very interesting. There was a movie years ago called Genghis Blues,
uh-huh.
which, if you want to watch a movie about the subject, also
yes,
has
definitely.
Some of this in it, so you can find out more about that way as well.
Very interesting projects, man. That's wonderful. I like your style.
Yeah, you know, variety is the spice of life.
It is.
Being eclectic is the coolest thing these days.
It is. You have to be. You know, you have to be open for anything nowadays.
Absolutely. I love all styles of music, so why not work in all or most styles of music?
Well, we're looking forward to that. When do you think the album's coming out? Do you have a projected date?
I don't have a specific release date yet.
Okay.
I think we're gonna announce the release date in the fall at some point, probably in January. So it will probably come out in the spring, I would assume.
Okay, we'll get you back on the show again so we can talk about that album, okay?
That would be great. I'd love to be back.
All right, Mark. Thank you so much for being on the show today, man. All the best luck to you. You know, next time you're in Florida, you know, look me up, man.
Sounds good. I've been there several times in Sarasota. I played to that Pink concert hall with the Beach Boys when I was touring with the Beach Boys, which I did for 6 months. My girlfriend is a classical musician.
Oh, cool.
With Joshua Bell.
Uh-huh.
And St. Martin and the Fields, and she's also played in that hall. Recently, I think in February, and
really?
I went and visited, so I was actually there last February. Too bad we didn't know each other then.
Yeah, I can't wait till music comes back, you know, that and also in Clearwater, Ruth Eckert Hall is another good venue in this area.
Yeah, I've been to Clearwater as well. Tell me about it, about the music, man. You probably don't know this about me, but I'm the biggest live music lover. I mean, I go, New York being what it is, I go to 2 or 3 concerts a night usually. And so, you know, I'm used to seeing 5 to 10 to 20 bands every week, and not having live music is really, really terrible, and I hope it comes back soon.
Me too, man. Me too. We need it back. I mean, you know, you see people marching in the streets, you see people, you know, celebrating spring break and all this stuff. Why can't music come back, right?
I totally agree.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark, for being on the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me, Ray. It's been
a blast. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
For more information about Mark Russelli, visit www.markrusselli.com. That's his official website. He's also on Facebook, facebook.com/MARC Mark Russelli, URSELLI, instagram.com/Mark Russelli, twitter.com/Mark Russelli, and linkedin.com/Mark Russelli. Purchase the genius and pioneering influence of Mark Bolan's T-Rex, 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee and one of the great rock musicians of all time, celebrated with Angel Headed Hipster, the songs of Mark Bolan and T-Rex. It's out now on BMG. The collection features 26 songs culled from Bolan's vast body of work, released as T-Rex and Tyrannosaurus Rex from 1968 through 1977. Angel Headed Hipster, the songs of Mark Bolan and T-Rex, available now at Amazon.com. Very special thanks to Fiona Bloom of The Bloom Effect for arranging this interview with Mark Russelli and the dynamic duo. of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And, of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, Chronicles Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us All Free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Thank you so much. You have a great week. And peace, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.